Heute. Ich bin Chris und heute nehme ich dich mit ins County Kildare, ins Herz einer der berühmtesten Pferdenationen der Welt, zum Irish National Stud. Irland ist bekannt für seine Rennpferde, für große Namen, große Rennen und eine jahrhundertealte Pferdekultur. Deutschland hingegen verbinden viele mit Präzision, Struktur, mit Dressur und Sportpferdezucht. Doch was macht die irische Pferdekultur eigentlich so besonders? Wie unterscheidet sie sich von den starken, systematisierten Zucht- und Ausbildungstraditionen, die wir aus Deutschland kennen? Und warum ist dieser Ort nicht nur für Fachleute, sondern auch für Familien und Kinder ein echtes Erlebnis? Darüber sprechen wir heute, spricht vor allem Felicitas, ich mache die Technik im Hintergrund, mit David, einem der Manager und Tourismusverantwortlichen, Tourismusmanager hier am Irish National Stud. Gemeinsam tauchen wir ein in eine faszinierende Geschichte aus Adel, Astrologie, politischen Entscheidungen und in eine Branche, die bis heute Zehntausende Menschen in Irland beschäftigt. Also, auf in den Sattel und kommt mit auf einen Rundgang durch die Geschichte, Gegenwart und Mythos der irischen Pferdezucht.
Welcome back to Erlebnis Ireland, the show where we bridge cultures across Europe. I'm your host, Felicitas, and today we're trotting in the lush green fields of County Kildare, home of the legendary Irish National Stud. Ireland is world famous for its racehorses, while Germany is known for precision breeding in sport horses. But what actually makes Irish horse culture so unique? How does it differ from the structured discipline systems we know in Germany? And why is this place special for a day out with kids? Today we speak with David, the tourism manager at the Irish National Stud, who'll help us explore these fascinating differences. Let's settle up and get started.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, David's my name. As I say, I'm one of the managers here on the farm. We're going to go out and learn about the thoroughbred industry, which is an extraordinary industry and employs over 30,000 people in Ireland between racing and breeding. Germany has a great thoroughbred industry as well. You have the German Derby, etc. But you, as you so rightly said, you're probably more famous for your dressage and your show jumping, which again we do in Ireland. Mm-hmm. Before we go out and explain how we, a commercial farm of breeding these top-class racehorses, works, bear with me for 5 minutes because we're going to learn about the bizarre history of the farm, as in you're in a national stud, which means that the government are involved. And you might be thinking, why the hell is the government involved in racing?
True.
Well, this gentleman we're looking at, he's got a top hat and he's looking quite splendid. He's the person that got originally involved. His name was William Hall Walker. He was a very wealthy man whose family inherited all their money from beer, something called Walker's Beer. Not Johnny Walker's whiskey, Walker's Beer. Okay. He was young, charismatic, good-looking, very fond of ladies, but he had, I don't know if this translates well, he had a chip on his shoulder. He felt a little bit inadequate because he was from Beer. He wasn't an earl or a baron or a duke. So he felt he was just a colonel from the army. So he had to make himself more important. So he comes in here in the year 1900 and he buys 1,000 acres. There would have been a big mansion here that's no longer. And he went about making himself very important. And he bred racehorses. But we have a statue in front of him here which tells you the story of his time. The statue is sitting on a beautiful bit of sculpted a bonsai tree. And that symbolises that, in the early Victorian times, people didn't get to exotic places like Japan. So exotic places had exhibitions in London, mm-hmm. Berlin, Paris, New York. And at one of these exhibitions in London, he meets Tasa Aida, a renowned Japanese gardener. Tasa sees money signs coming and he says, give me 40 labourers in 5 years and I will build you a piece of Japan. And that's why we have a famous Japanese gardens on our farm.
Which
explains the story. And it's got this weird story of, and you have to be very careful going round because it was built before health and safety. And you basically, it tells the story from childhood right up to passing away. But it was a bit of a vanity project. On the outside of the sphere, which the bonsai tray is sitting on, you see star signs. And again, you see Cancer, Sagittarius, etc. Again, it got lost in history a bit, but the late Victorians were very interested in this new science of astrology. In fact, in Buckingham Palace, they had their own personal astrologer. And he was no different. And every time a foal was born, he'd send off to these rather wacky astrologers. And we've got these amazing books in our boardroom, which basically line up the planets. And it would say, if this was a woman, she'd beat every man. Put her into training, you're going to make a fortune. And the next page says, cat meat, useless. He's always going to bang the left-hand side of his face. And you think, this is... And he was so convinced he would sell everything off. And everyone thought he would lose all his money. But everything he kept were brilliant. And he was one of the most successful owner breeders of his time. Mm-hmm. So I'm a cynic. I think they were looked after better. But he put it all down to the stars. Mm-hmm. The horses, self-explanatory. He bred horses. He was an amateur rider, but he also, as I said, and he hunted behind hounds on his horse. The cards, there's a little bit of a naughty, mischievous story in there. Is his wife used to get a lot of card lessons. There's a game called bridge, mm-hmm. and his wife would play bridge with the king. And the king, she comes back one day. She probably did a few other things with the king, but we mightn't keep that in the edit. But he. She comes back one day and she says the king is a little bit upset because his horses are really bad, and yet his horses were winning everything. So she instructed her husband as a good citizen to donate some of his good horses to the king. And one of his horses had a lovely name. He was called Minoru. And Minoru was the little son of Tessa the gardener. Mm-hmm. But Minoru the horse gets given to the king. And in 1909, it wins the biggest race in England, which happened to be last Saturday, called the English Derby. Okay. And in 1909, Minoru wins the English Derby for the king. To this day, the kings and queens of England have only won it once, and that was in Minoru. So that was an important time. So then we get to 1915, the Great War. At this stage, he'd lent his wife to the king, his favourite horse to the king.
So he's everything.
He led everything. So his final thing, he says, this tank in the war is going to be useless. You're going to need more war military horses. Okay. So he donates the entire farm and all its stock to the English nation, because it's before independence, and it becomes the English National Stud Farm for breeding race horses mm-hmm. and possible war horses. He packs his bags and he goes over and he becomes an elected member of parliament in a place called Wavertree in England. But he gets a call up from the king, arise, Lord Wavertree. He gets knighted. And that is probably what he wanted the whole time. He is now a member of the aristocracy. He was happy. Okay. In 1921-22, we get our independence. But it's taken it 800 years to achieve this. Looking after horses is not on our agenda. So bizarre, it stays the English National Stud within Ireland mm-hmm. for the 20s, the 30s and most of the 40s. It wasn't until after the Second World War that eventually they get slightly, it's ridiculous having an English National Stud in Ireland. So they left, but they took all the stock. They took the mares, the foals, the stallions to set up in the UK and left us with an empty farm. And this left us really quite an awkward situation, because it would have taken a lot of money to restock.
Yeah, sure.
And this is where I get passionate, because the Irish government had a crystal ball, because although they had no money, they recognised an industry that was could boom. And more importantly, it brings in huge in foreign investment. In 2025, this man started, but he was also friends of the Aga Khan. The Aga Khan, he persuaded him to buy houses here. His descendants still have two huge farms just about 5 miles down the road, employing hundreds of people. But we don't just have the Aga Khan down the road. We have Kuwaitis, we have Saudis, we have Americans. We have one of our biggest single landowners who own land in the whole of Ireland are not the Murphys, but the Maktoums. Okay. Sheikh Mohammed Al Maktoum, who basically owns the country of Dubai, mm-hmm. has 9 farms bigger than this all over Ireland.
Oh my gosh.
Employing hundreds of people and coming in his helicopter, spending a fortune and going away again. The perfect tenant. But I'm proud as an Irishman. If you go down to Tipperary, the most famous in the entire world is a farm called Coolmore Farms. Now, anyone in Germany will know, if they're involved in racing, will know about Coolmore Farms. Mm-hmm. They have farms all over the world. They have farms in America, in Australia. One of the biggest farm in America is owned by Coolmore Farms, and it's Irish. So, as I said earlier, we employ nearly 30,000 people in racing and breeding. We weren't like that in 1946, but the government said, no, we're on to something. So they restocked the farm. Mm-hmm. And from the English National Stud, it became the Irish National Stud. But one big problem, we don't get any money from them. So when we're going to walk around and talk, we'll talk okay. about how we make our money.
That's good.
Okay.
Sounds interesting.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So as we walk around the farm, let me briefly explain how we make our money, because it's trying to make money, okay? So one way, which has just ended, we have a very big birthing hospital.
Oh, nice.
And we call it a foaling station. And we fold over 230 foals this year, about 230 foals. So like a hospital, they come here, have their baby, and go home again. So we get a fee for foaling and any bed and breakfast.
Okay.
Number two, some of them stay on the farm. We then look after them for about 40 days. Mm-hmm. So when they go home, they have a foal at foot, but also a foal inside them.
Oh, okay.
So we get a foaling fee, more bed and breakfast, and a stallion fee. So
okay.
we like that.
Okay.
Number three, the company who run it for the government, we own about 40 ladies, four-legged ladies. They have about 40 babies every year. And those babies then go on to we don't have racehorses, so we sell them at the auctions. Where we basically sell unnamed, untrained. You'll see that in the experience. Number four, there's about 40 mares and foals doing exactly the same as what we do, but we don't own them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to breed a horse, but you didn't want to buy a farm, you could leave them here the whole time.
Cool.
Like an investment, we look after your, we're like your hotel.
Okay.
And then finally, we're going to go up and see them in the paddock now in a minute. We have four main men, stallions. That doesn't sound a lot, but hopefully you'll get 400 or 500 ladies visiting them.
Okay.
So they are busy. So basically, I always say to men, if you come back as a racehorse, make sure you run very fast, because if you don't run fast enough, they'll cut off your important bits and you have to run for another 10 years.
Aww.
So all these the really good stallions, they could retire when they left college. They left before they become mature, they made enough money and they could retire. But only four horses to 400 or 500 ladies, but we'll go. Before we head up, two brief statues here that are important from one history point of view. There's a rounded statue there that the Queen unveiled in 2011. That was a worrying historical time because no Queen had come back since we got our independence. So this was chosen as the icebreaker, and the trip was a huge political success.
I think it was the same like with Marbach.
Yes.
And there's a little story about a Queen that was visiting Marbach because the German thought she wants to see the poets.
Yes.
And then she said, "Where are the horses?"
Well,
yes.
It makes me laugh because the next day on our agenda, there's a beautiful historical site called the Rocker Cashel. What people don't realize, she spent 15 minutes in Rocker Cashel and then another 5 hours in the biggest stud farm in the world, Coolmore. So it was a huge part. This other statue is very impressive. This is 22 solid tons of limestone. It's very symbolic because it's the limestone material in our land why you grow such strong bones.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a coincidence. A lot of Kentucky and Florida would be, you know, limestone. The piece in question is called, we're going to see him out in his paddock.
Mm-hmm.
He was once insured for 60 million euros. He's
Ooh.
Kept us alive for the last, sadly, he's now retired. He's like Robert De Niro. He had about 80 ladies last year, but he's finished now. And he's called Invincible Spirit. And he's an absolute superstar. I will tell you why later. But it was a very brave piece of art because usually you get a mold and you make a bronze. This was 2 years chipping away at one piece. And if it was a very brave commission.
Absolutely.
So as we head up here, I think I always say to our guests, we talk an awful lot about our industry, but people really only want to remember the important things. So the most important things before we head up to the stallions is that the reason we're not going to the foaling station is that about 2 weeks ago has completely finished. If you had a foal now, or let's say if you had a foal in December, it would be useless, worthless. You could not give it away. Because it's like school children. Their birthdays are always classified as the 1st of January. This is really important. If you had a foal born in December, he would be one on the 1st of January. And therefore, the 1st of January next year, you would have to enter them into two-year-old races. Well, they're only going to be 1 year old. The following year, you have to race with all the three-year-olds, and you're only going to be the size of a two-year-old. You're never going to catch up. So they're all born January, February, March, April, about 50 in May, and bang, the whole lot finishes. To make sure it never happens is that we know how long it cooks in the oven. So it's 11 months gestation, which means the stallions start at a very opportunity time of year. The stallions start on Valentine's Day, of all places. And if they start on Valentine's Day, it means the first babies come around the 14th of January. So you'd never start breeding earlier than Valentine's Day in case you had it at the wrong time. So that's the first important thing. Before we talk about the second important thing, we have these flags here. And you'll see a German flag there. These flags symbolise the most famous course in the world you can take. Now, it's not famous so much so being the best course in the world anymore, because now you can do masters, you can do agricultural colleges and university study. But the reason the course here is so famous, it was the first ever course. It's 55 years old, of having an international stud management course. So it was very, very renewed. So students come all around the world. Now, it is a win-win situation, because between January and the end of June, all action happens on the farm. We have five or six babies born every night. The honeymoon suite is very busy from Valentine's Day, and it's quite cold at night, so all the mummies and babies have to come in. And also there are vets coming in 24/7 looking at ovaries. So now the phoning is finished. In another 2 weeks' time, the stallions will be finished. And it's lovely and warm, or it's getting warmer, and all the mummies and babies are re-impregnated and back out in the fields. So we don't need all that labour. Now, to pay these 30 students from all around the world back, we have serious lectures. And we'll bring in the head of a company of, let's say, insurance or transport or bloodstock sales or pedigree research or stud management, veterinary care. I could go on and on, yearling preparation, pinhooking, all the different jobs and careers. They take serious exams, but in 2 weeks' time, they will graduate. And so they come in January, they leave in end of June, they graduate and they go. But what they will really get, as you see these flags simulated here, is that one goes back to Germany and starts maybe becoming a trainer. One goes to France and becomes an agent. Maybe you have a breeder in Kentucky. We have this year farms represented from South Africa and from Australia. So they will have those contacts for the rest of their life.
That's lovely.
So it's a really, really sought after course. And, you know, as I said, we have over there, we have some of the famous faces that have been through the place since 1971 when it first started. So it's a great way of getting into the industry. Now we're going to just walk in to where the boys live. The stallions. Now this, for the sake of not having a camera, just to describe, is a very luxurious, beautiful boxes with flowers hanging from arm down, with a lovely bouncy surface. We're not being sexist, it's just the boys, the ladies, because it takes 11 months, can only have one a year, whereas he can have four a day.
Oh, yeah.
So this is like selling are commodities, if you like. So if you can imagine you own a female, or you might own 10 females, this lovely bouncy surface, you would want to say, my female's about to have a baby. Before she has that, you come, and the horse you're interested in is March, this lovely bounce, and you're looking at it, watch up and down. It's called a stallion parade. And you're thinking, how big is he? How big is she back at home? Yes, that's a good mix. You could say he's a sprinter. She's a middle distance horse, but her dad was a sprinter. So you're matching up. Then we have our sales team, and they are standing beside you going, oh, the trainers think these are magnificent. Buy one, get one free. You know, we're trying to sell as many nominations. And a stallion can have up to 140, 150 ladies in the 6 months. So it's a big part of it. And then when they start to produce winners, then the price goes up. And as I say, we're going to see him out in this valley, Invincible Spirit there. His maximum price people had to pay, and there was a waiting list, was 120,000 euros.
Oh, that's a lot.
Yeah, for every mare, every mare. Yeah. So,
is there like a guarantee that the
mare will get in foal? Yeah. Most of the big money ones is called 1st of October, no foal, no fees. So you come here, you have your baby, we ring you on the 1st of October, about halfway through the pregnancy, and if she's still in foal, then you have to pay your money.
Okay.
And you could insure after that. Okay. Some of the cheaper ones, you just have to pay up front and then you can come back if she's not in foal. But you know, it saves a lot of paperwork.
Absolutely.
So I suppose the second most important and then thing of your entire trip around the farm, if you don't understand our industry, and one of the biggest difference between sport horses in Germany and thoroughbreds in Germany is that a lot of people don't realise thoroughbreds in Germany, as in anywhere in the world, you cannot breed artificially. There was a worldwide ban on breeding any racehorse artificially. Whereas, if you have a beautiful dressage, German-bred dressage, warm blood, mm-hmm. My wife has represented Ireland eventing, mm-hmm. and we've been to Aachen, so we know all about sport horses in Germany. But if you have a beautiful female, she can have lots of children, but you don't physically have it herself. Her embryos mm-hmm. can be transplanted into a surrogate, and she carries on dressage or show jumping.
Okay.
And a man is even easier. You just freeze gallons of semen and you can DHL it around the world.
Yeah.
And that's the way it does, and no better place than Germany, the finest in the world. But in racehorses, and this is the same in Germany, anywhere in the world, absolutely not. The only way you're allowed to breed a racehorse is to drive in.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old days, you had to quarantine, but nowadays it's like the COVID test. Mm-hmm. You can get her medical done so quickly. Mm-hmm. You can actually drive in with a medical test, use the stallion, and drive out again.
I think we saw a horse container on the ferry this morning.
Yes, so. Yes. Could
maybe
easily
your customers.
could easily be. Yeah, I mean, I actually drove in from Scotland last night, and there were about five or six, and one of them was coming to a stud farm to pick up
uh-huh.
them. You know, they mightn't drive in and use them, but I mean, occasionally they would come in from England on the night boat, visit the stallion, and go back on the night boat mm-hmm. tonight. But there is a reason why we're not allowed to do it like sport horses. A lot of people don't realise that the thoroughbred is actually quite a new make-up breed.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from about 300 years ago,
mm-hmm.
three Arab horses, not thoroughbreds, purebred Arabs, were brought into England and Ireland. They looked weird because they were light, skinny. They looked like a whippet dog rather than a St. Bernard. And they were the fastest horses that they've ever uh-huh. seen, but they had no stamina. After half a mile, they were useless.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so little, light and simple, they'd trip up, falling up over that little hedge over there.
Okay.
So to breed, to get them to have more stamina and agility, they bred with our ugly farm horses and our war horses.
Mm-hmm.
But very cleverly, there was a man called Mr. Weatherby. Now, the Weatherbys are very influential people still in the world of racing. They even own a bank. But the original Mr. Weatherby, he basically wrote down every single breeding of those three stallions. So virtually every racehorse in Germany and anywhere in the world can go back to that one of those three stallions.
Okay.
Can you imagine if you had artificial, how this would be really upset people? Because let me say, when I first got into the industry, one of the greatest stallions in the world was a horse called Northern Dancer.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Canadian horse based in America. People were spending over $1 million to use Northern Dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so influential. There's about 10% of his DNA in every horse in the world. And that's with natural breeding.
Mm-hmm.
If you had artificial, everything just would be a son or a daughter of Northern
sure.
Dancer. So it's a good thing. Now, there is a way, this amuses people, that and this is why people with sport horses get very confused. They say, well, how do come you have breeding all around the world? Well, I tell you what we do. When our young stallions here are finished up at the end of June, they get a passport, a visa, and some suntan lotion. Artificial is banned, so they physically fly down to Australia. Now, it could be New Zealand or South Africa, but Australia is one of the biggest markets. That's a good idea. Why do you think? Because, of course, their summer is our winter.
Sure.
Our winter is our summer. Yeah. So their 1st of January is 1st of August. And that's when ours are on holiday. Yeah. So he goes down. Oh, there he is. That's one of the... This horse I'll tell you about. He's got a funny name.
Okay.
You've got to be careful, guys. These are the stallions. So you've got to have a little bit more respect for those, okay?
Okay.
Okay. That's a big stallion.
Yeah.
Anyway, just finish up on this. So they go down to Australia because the dates are all wrong. So we have a horse went down there 3 years ago. Just be careful. Yeah, 3 years ago. He came back, but he only had babies after this season. So after he'd been back here, he went back to Australia. He came back the following Christmas before Valentine's Day. But the end of last year, he only had babies and yearlings. So he went back to us. He went up to 4 or 5 years. He came back this year, but he is already going to fly to Australia in about 3 weeks. It's called Lucky Vega. At Christmas time, we will all sit around a table because maybe he's done enough flying, because now he'll have runners. Those two-year-olds will be running all over Ireland and Australia. And if they're really, really good, we'll give him a holiday and you have to give us 50,000 to use him. Instead of 5,000, 50,000. And if they're really, really bad, they won't want him in Australia. But if you can understand by going up and down for the first 4 or 5 years, we've done two important things. Firstly, we have paid off any debt we have on him.
Okay.
Because everyone's paid to use him. So by going to Australia, we've doubled our income.
Absolutely.
But secondly, even more importantly, we have played roulette. And if you play over a roulette table, and you have one ball and loads of numbers, the chance of your numbers coming up are very little.
Mm-hmm.
If you have hundreds of runners
sure.
all over Europe, but also hundreds of runners all over Australasia, you are quadrupling your chance of having winners.
Sure.
And it's and it's only winners that is going to make people come back, and you can put your price up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll finish up here for a bit. Now, 1st of January, no artificial insemination and stallion shuttling. They're the first important, really important things.
Thank you.
We'll go
interesting.
So the stallions are coming in. That stallion that's just gone past, are we still recording?
Yeah.
That stallion that's just gone past has a funny name. The people who bought it, so he only retired there this year. He came here this year, but he was a racehorse. And the people who virtually bought it to become a racehorse was a young man in the city, and he got his first bonus. And he said, I'd like to buy it, but I can't do this on my own. So he rang his friends and he said, I'm getting all my friends together to come in on this horse. And his friends said, oh no, he said, I can't come in on that. He said, why not? He said, I only got engaged yesterday and my new wife would be very worried if I start buying racehorses. So they named the horse Should Have Been a Ring. And he was really good. So Should Have Been a Ring really did well and he got his money back.
Oh, that's good.
So, Invincible Spirit, I don't think we can go without talking about him. We saw his statue, that magnificent statue.
Mm-hmm.
Invincible Spirit was 95% of all the farm's income from the last 20 years. He's one of the most magnificent stallions in Europe, and he's produced, his sons have become champion daddies of their own. And just to explain how a humble farm like us got such a magnificent horse that was insured for 60 million euros... Getting a stallion is our biggest problem at the moment.
Sure.
Because if you can imagine, in the olden days, when I grew up and everything, there were more millionaires. Today, there are probably a lot more billionaires. So when billionaires won the biggest race in Germany, let's say, win the German Derby, they ring a farm in Germany and say, I don't want to buy a farm. You buy 50%. So the farm in Germany buys 50%. And then the owner would say, I still have too much. I will sell a little bit to all my friends who own females so they can breed with him. So he'd sell shares. And that's the way it was done all around the world for hundreds of years. But then about 40 years ago, the billionaires got involved and they started to have private trainers. Now, guys, all stay where you are, guys.
Good morning,
no. Who's this? This is Nando Prado, one of our stallions who... He's having his first two-year-olds this year, and they're really good. And he's called after a famous sportsman in South America who tragically survived a plane accident,
mm-hmm.
but he had to tuck into some of his poor old friends that deceased. He had to eat them to survive, and there was a documentary on him. Anyway, that's Nando Parado. But he's got his first 2-year-olds. We're really excited, and some of them are looking to be really good. So going back to Invincible, so the billionaires would have their private trainers, their private stud farms, but worse for us, if you start to beat them on the racetrack, they just buy the horse off you. So there are very, very few stallions coming out that aren't already someone else's. But they can't buy all of them. And Invincible Spirit, he only won about €500,000. So it sounds like a lot, but you win over $1 million. Beggars can't be choosers. We buy him. But because he didn't win a lot, we can't charge a lot. So his first fee to charge him was €10,000. That's not a lot of money. And if you're not a lot of money, you're only going to attract cheaper, slower, poorer ladies who haven't got a load of prize money. All the really fast ladies who've gotten lots of prize money, they can afford to go to your proven stallion. So slower ladies visiting a horse that didn't win, you wouldn't think much would happen. First 2-year-olds come out and they were like lightning. They were like winning everything. So all the fast females went, if they could do that with slow females, we want in there. So the price went from 10,000, it went right down to 4,000 or 5,000 because the runners hadn't started yet. But as soon as the runners started to go, it shot up to 35,000 to use him. But then he wins the lottery because one of his very first 2-year-olds became a 3-year-old. And in his first year as the 3-year-old, he had a French Derby winner, a horse called Lawman. So that was, everyone wanted to use him. He went to 80, 90, and he peaked for a long time at €120,000.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and he was 95% of our income. I'll finish up on saying he's produced about 18 sons became good enough to become stallions, which is amazing. He's produced a champion sire in England called Kingman. Mm-hmm. But when he was a baby, to pay the mortgage, he went up and down to Australia. And if you went to Australia today, they have a champion sire in Australia called I Am Invincible. Mm-hmm. It was his, the son of Invincible Spirit. And you have to pay $300,000 to use I Am Invincible. He's their champion sire in Australia. And the nice thing is, I Am Invincible is owned by one of our first students here in the 1970s.
Sounds like a good investment.
Good investment. There we go. We can have a good port. So they're going to bring one more. You don't want to say they're going to bring one more big stallion in now.
Oh, okay. So I have wonderful paddocks here.
Yeah, as I say, they get a little bit better. They get a bit messed up in the winter, and we'll go and see all the mummies. The mummies and babies can stay out. Some of them are in.
Das war unser Rundgang durch den Irish National Stud, einen Ort, in dem sich Geschichte, Politik, Wissenschaft und Pferdekultur auf eine ganz besondere Weise verbinden. Wir haben gehört, wie aus einer privaten Mission ein nationales Projekt wurde, wie mutige Entscheidungen nach dem Zweiten Weltkrieg den Grundstein für eine der erfolgreichsten Pferdeindustrien der Welt gelegt haben und warum Irland bis heute internationale Investitionszüchter und Pferdeliebhaber aus aller Welt anzieht. Mein herzlicher Dank gilt vor allem auch David, der uns mit viel Humor, Wissen und Leidenschaft hinter die Kulissen dieses außergewöhnlichen Ortes hat blicken lassen. Wenn euch diese Episode gefallen hat, abonniert unseren Podcast Erlebnis Irland, teilt die Episode gern mit anderen Irland-Fans und schreibt mir, wenn euch Orte und Themen als nächstes interessieren. Bis zur nächsten Reise durch Kultur und Geschichte und die gelebte Tradition Irlands. Slán und bis bald. Euer Chris.